You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. This is Dori Francis with Every Voice Matters. I'm so glad to have you be here with us today. We're here every Thursday at 12 noon Mountain, 11 a.m. Pacific. I have a really interesting guest with us today, and we've gotten some very eclectic questions as well. So I think we're going to have a show filled with curiosity and discussion and some information. My guest today is Adam McRobbie, who is coming to us from British Columbia, Canada. Welcome, Adam. Good morning for you. Good afternoon for my guests here in Colorado and eastward. You're my second international guest in a row, so it's been nice that we're spreading out across the globe and really bring information from lots of areas around the world. So Adam has a passion in science, especially biology, and he is a school teacher. He's worked as a teacher in various different schools, Christian schools. He's taught ESL students. He's tutored high school students. God bless you. And being a teacher is just so hard these days on a regular basis, and even more difficult now. He's actually been homeschooling his two children, who are both teenagers. So that's also big kudos to you for that, another challenge. As a family, they enjoy hiking and camping and being outside in the wilderness, but they also enjoy being in the city and going to art galleries and public markets and just really enjoying parks and gardens as well. So it's the best of both worlds where you are. Also, musically, you play the piano, and I understand you and your children like to sing Canadian songs and American folk songs.
Yes.
that must be a lot of fun as a family.
America, a lot, in addition to our Canadian heritage.
Wonderful.
Beautiful.
So today, you know, the show is called Every Voice Matters, and Adam reached out to me and said, I'd really like to talk about that question, about why every voice matters, and really talk about some human aspects of our souls and different expressions of what is taking place with human beings in this world. And we got quite a list of different questions as well from our listeners, California and Texas and Utah and Indiana, Oregon. I think there was one from Georgia. So we're going to be sharing those with Adam and just opening up to some discussions about some of those questions. But, you know, let's start off with just your interpretation, Adam, of why every voice matters.
Every voice matters indescribably, infinitely. Every voice matters because every voice comes from the soul. Every voice is an expression of the human soul. So, and that's who we really are, our intangible essence. It's not something we can perceive with the senses. It's not something that science can ever measure, analyze, or study. From my experience with science, learning science.
I haven't seen that either. And I think people have tried, but have not been able to come up with any concrete information in regards to the human soul.
No. Science can only study and measure what we perceive with our senses, the finite,
right,
tangible, what belongs to the physical world, the physical realm of nature, rocks, trees, sand.
Things you can touch and see and smell.
Can touch and see. It cannot have much to say about spiritual, what I call the spiritual realm of nature, which is where our soul is, where our voice comes from, and how wonderfully human that is. Voice, expression, breath of the soul. And indeed, a voice can be extremely musical. And in fact, be so artistically beautiful that it can lift us to great transcendental experience.
Oh, yes, music is and there's so many different types of music, and yes. Absolutely can change how you feel in an instant.
Yes, and music makes us resonate in such a state of being, in such a mental, psychological state of being that we can't actually use language even to express it. It's indescribable. It's inexpressible, ultimately. It's just a magical connection in a way. And so we have a soul because even though human beings are certainly very rational, we have a very highly developed intellect, and we can solve incredibly complex abstract problems. We've already invented the smartphone. I believe we're eventually going to figure out how to invent space travel, intergalactic space travel.
That's in process as we speak. Yes.
Exactly. Including artificial gravity, which is what is portrayed in Star Trek or Star Wars.
Right.
There has to be artificial gravity or they couldn't walk around in spaceships is the way they do.
Right.
So. Anyways, that's going to happen. And even though we are so rational and reasonable, we are ultimately spiritual beings. Something that is completely beyond the rational. And that's a reality we've from experience just from reflecting on who we are, just introspectively reflecting on who we are. We can't learn that from science. But we are spiritual because we have done so many things that were created from the imagination. Religion,
absolutely.
Religions and mythologies were all created by the human imagination. We have spent countless hours, years, and building monuments, building pyramids, whether it's in Central America, Mexico, South America, they're flat top there. There's kind of difference, not pointy, but still pyramid. Great pyramids in Egypt, like the great pyramid of Cheops is the largest one. For religion, either as a tribute to honor the dead, protect the dead, or to carry out religious rituals in South America.
Right.
To propitiate gods, rain gods, wind gods, sun gods. I mean, that is something we don't really need to do those things to survive. The basic bottom line biological imperative for us is to grow, become strong enough and compete for a mate and reproduce, pass on our genes to the next generation. If we can do that well, we're successful. But we can build rudimentary shelter, learn to make fire. We can develop cookery culture and fire to make that happen. But we go so far beyond that. We make music. We've in France, the caves at Lascaux, people have crawled through tunnels, very like hardly more than a couple feet in diameter. For straining and sweating for hours to get to these caverns where they can conduct
I just saw a program about that. Yes,
yes,
they've been doing that for hundreds of years.
And they do it because it means a lot to them, because it helps them to cope with a very complex and often very disturbing, turbulent world, forces of nature they don't understand, and it helps lift them to a place of transcendence and to connect with the spirit world that is very meaningful and very human, but we don't need to do those things to survive. We don't. I mean, ants and wasps and fish, and they just do their instinctual behaviors, and bacteria is extremely successful.
Obviously.
In climates, and it just carries on and producing, and down in deep sea sulfur vents, it extracts energy from sulfur at boiling hot water. Actually, this is off Baja coast of California. So deep sea sulfur vents, there's a extremely high pressure, high temperature sulfur, but it thrives there. And, but it doesn't build tall buildings. It doesn't paint paintings. It just
doesn't create food.
That's who we are. We do that because we have a human soul. And there certainly is a creative source of that, which I like to call the ground of being, the source of love and life. But I'll leave it at that because it can never be understood by us. It's indescribable. It's ineffable. It's impersonal. I believe it's impersonal because it's not a being at all. Not a being that we can relate to. It is being itself, all-encompassing, omnipresent. So I have composed an explanation of reincarnation that is certainly informed by ancient religions, but not based on them. It's not dictated by them. It's not based on any uncritical acceptance of a moral divine authority. It's not based on divine wisdom. It's based on human free inquiry, humanism.
And reincarnation is a subject and a topic that many people are interested in or curious about. And I think some of the questions that were submitted, are in regards to that as well. And
Yes. So every voice matters because a voice is the expression of our soul. We like to, and we are very, very much connected because we are used to role-playing. We role-play using the imagination, and we're very good at it. We're very interested in it. From children, like to play with Lego figures or dolls, and they pretend they're other people.
Using imagination.
Using their imagination, even other species or people who are certainly not their age. They could be different family members. And how can we do that? And actors do it so well in movies, on TV. Artists do it well when they write novels and books. Even dancers certainly do it well when they play a role in telling a story. And I believe we could do it so well because many of us already have been other people through reincarnation. We've had past lives. And those of us who haven't will be. So we'll have that ability. And we're all composed of the same spiritual stuff flowing from the ground of being. I believe our souls are all unique. Where our souls are different because we have different egos. So I define the soul as containing the ego, which is the self-conscious, which is the conscious thinking self. It contains our intellect, our center of reason, our imagination, our will. That's our ego, I believe, along with our soul, is immortal. It lives forever. It is permanent. That lives forever with our soul. Whereas in contrast, our bodies are not. Our bodies
are temporary.
Deteriorate and die, decompose, yep, and dies, unless they're aware in varying degrees. And I'm certainly, as I hit middle age, I'm becoming aware. And so hair falls out and changes. So the body dies. So we lose, sadly, but I believe this is true. We lose our memories of our knowledge, relationships. We lose memories of our unique personality. We lose memories of all our experiences, which is sad. But that happens with the death of the brain. And that's certainly something that science can say something about. Like science says, the brain is required for memory. So we lose that, but we maintain our own unique perspective, our consciousness, our self-consciousness. We maintain that, our own unique perspective on the world through ego, which becomes expressed as in our next lives. When we die, the soul with our ego transmigrates to occupy a human embryo, randomly selected around the world. It could be any baby anywhere around the world because it's an impersonal random selection. But certainly very meaningful. And then our ego will animate the brain. Our ego will reside in the brain along with our self-consciousness and conscious thinking self. So it would inhabit the brain and soul be the rest of our body. And so our will would function in the
let's
brain.
Let's take some of the questions that some of
certainly.
Our listeners have sent in. And we're going to start off with a bang with Aaron from California. He says, do you believe there is life on other planets?
Yes, I do.
I do as well. Yes. Yeah.
I do. There are been proven to be over 4,100 exoplanets that we've tracked. And among those, there are probably enough that have what's called a special zone, a special that they are of a certain distance from their suns where liquid water is stable. So as long as liquid water is stable in their orbit, they can support life. And many exoplanets have been detected. So exoplanets are planets outside of our own solar system.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so far away. There's so many light years of space between us and them. It's impossible to have contact. And the chance of them having developed the technology to visit us might not be much greater than what might be very small.
Well, I think we've been hearing more and more of that in the news recently, that there is very firm belief that we are being visited. And I have no doubt that there's some connection that's taking place or going to take place.
Yes. But I believe in reincarnation that we would stay on planet Earth because I think whoever lives on other planets would not be human.
Right.
So they would have a different kind of soul.
Yeah, I agree.
So that I think the human soul can only express its full potential in a human body. Therefore, we wouldn't come back as animals. But it's a great question, though. Great question. And I look forward to when we can travel out there, see what's out there, and visit, make contact. Maybe they'll make contact first, like you were alluding to.
Alicia in Texas asks, what are your thoughts about genetically modified humans?
My thoughts are optimistic. I think that they're still human.
That's what about the soul when you genetically modify a human being?
The soul is very, very separate from the body. I think with medical science performing more and more incredible achievements, I think it's a small step to genetically modify humans. We've already genetically modified plants and cloned sheep. and there's made like seedless watermelons, stuff like that. So
right. Yes. Banana, it's already happening. Yes.
The bananas are extremely different. The bananas we eat from the original wild bananas. But they're still human, and it would not affect the soul. Any kind of clone would not affect the soul at all, which is completely separate. The soul is who we truly are. Our body is certainly very sacred and beautiful and important and meaningful, and it should be extremely respected. But our soul is who we truly are. That's unaffected.
Annette in Utah says, could I come back in a new life as an animal? And I think you just kind of touched on that just a moment ago.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Because the human soul can only achieve its full potential for self-expression in a human body. And the whole natural phenomenon, the whole cycle of human life is, I believe, follows laws. There might be spiritual laws, but they're still laws of being, of occupying, inhabiting human bodies, of transmigrating exclusively to human bodies after death.
So do you believe that animals have souls?
Yes. I believe that they do. They're just different. And I'm not sure if they're all species specific. Their soul might just go back to the ground of being and enter different species, travel across species, because there's so many.
Right.
There's so many species, whereas there's a very big difference between humans and animals. Even though we're very similar, especially to chimpanzees.
Right.
In fact, and I have to speak to this because that's a very good question. Will we come back as an animal? So there's only a 3% difference between our DNA and chimpanzee DNA,
yes,
as proved by science. Chimpanzees have been shown to be self-aware, and they can reason. They've learned sign language. They can look in a mirror and learn that, oh, that's my face, and start to touch their face and respond and behave in different ways than they would in the wild without a mirror. And they're extremely intelligent.
They're very nurturing. They recognize their children.
Yep. Yes.
They mourn loss.
So we're classified with chimpanzees in the same subtribe. And they mourn loss. They show emotion. And you can see it from pets. They're very emotional.
Absolutely. Yep.
That's a soul. Yeah, for sure. They have souls. And they're very special and sacred that way. But they're not human. They're not human.
Brandon in Utah says, I read that humans are remarkably genetically similar, sharing approximately 99.9% of their genetic code with another. Is that true?
Well, that's absolutely true.
I mean, that kind of is what you were just relating to.
Yeah, that's been proven by biochemical studies. So we're all really one big world family. We are inextricably related. And I was going to speak about this to give more evidence of why every voice matters, is because there's less than 1% genetic variation between all racial groups, or between all people, people. In general, and the genetic variation between racial groups, like you could say between Koreans and Africans, are actually less. There's actually less differences between them, or between African Americans and us, than there are between people within our own racial group, own Caucasian group. There's actually less. So we are extremely closely related to African Americans, there's a very strong theory that we all arose from Africa. The first humans arose in Africa. Anyways, and we
Yeah, I did my genetic research and my DNA through National Geographic, and it showed that my DNA actually originated in Africa.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and then moved through Europe from there.
So people might wonder, well, what about things like, you know, skin color and skin folds? Well, those differences are so superficial. They're just a very, very few. They actually account for a tiny minority of the variation. Most of the variation is from a whole vast array of other traits. Skin color, skin folds, eye skin folds are just a few of huge hundreds and thousands of traits in that vary. And those aren't significant. We are all related. We're all family. We're all absolutely intrinsically equal in terms of what we're physically composed of. And to me, that beautifully reflects how we're absolutely intrinsically inherently equal in how we're spiritually composed. We're all made of the same spiritual stuff. We are the stuff on which dreams are made on, says the character Prospero from Shakespeare's Tempest. That's who we are. We all are. We're all equally valued. And so that's why every voice matters.
That's every right. Voice. I believe every voice matters.
From the tiniest voice, from baby to senior. My children have delighted me and taught me so much. I always say you've taught me, if not more, than I've taught you. So I've learned so much from their voices.
Brian in California says, what does it mean to leave a legacy?
To leave a legacy, yeah, I was thinking about that. Well, to me, it would be leaving behind a world that's a little bit more beautiful, a little bit more humane, perhaps a bit more socially just than the world we inherited.
So each person can leave a legacy. You know,
yes.
We were having this conversation in my writers group where some people thought, well, you know, you have to be wealthy or famous or well-known or popular to leave a legacy. And I said, no, the person next door who's gardening can leave a legacy.
Exactly.
Everybody can leave a legacy.
Anybody who uses their imagination to envision what would be beautiful, what would look better, how could the world be better, and then just follow through and do it, whether it's gardening or writing a book or talking to somebody, listening to somebody, spending time.
Yes.
As a parent, I know how important it is to spend time with people, to show love with my children. Love is being there. It's being there. It's listening. And so legacy, yes, it would be one way in which we can make the world a more socially just or beautiful place, more peaceful.
That would be nice.
I really admire people who work so hard to protect animal species, forests, and
right.
Try to fight against urban sprawl, for advances in medicine to help cure people who are sick, to try to clean up the rivers, lakes, pollution, help give better quality housing to people who live in slums, and to help try to bring peace to a really war-torn world.
Yeah.
Fighting's still going on.
Carson in Indiana says, I read that scientists say that human species is so evolutionarily young and its migratory pattern so wide and restless that it has simply not had a chance to divide itself into separate biological groups or races in any but the most superficial ways. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, it's very superficial. Human beings arose from our ancestor Homo erectus only about 300,000 years ago.
Yeah, we're pretty young, actually. Yeah.
We're very young. So if you took a person, a human being 300,000 years ago, put them in modern clothes in a crowd, you wouldn't be able to pick them up. So very young. To put that in perspective of how young we are, so that accounts for the very, very low genetic variation, or it's almost negligible genetic variation among us. And it's because we are so young. So to put that in perspective, the prosimians, who are like the very primitive primates, like the slender loris and squirrel-sized little mammals who lived during the dinosaur age, cowering, trembling in trees. So they're very, there are very, very distant ancestors, mm-hmm. in a way. They're not direct ancestors, but because we're descended from the apes, but they're the first mammals. They existed about 40 million years ago. No, sorry, 60 million years ago. 60 million years ago. And from them came the monkeys, came next. But the prosimians had large eyes, very sensitive hands and feet, slender, but good for grasping. But eyes, they had eyes that were closely set, like ours. And so that's 60 million years ago. Then the monkeys, the anthropoids, who have larger brains and body size, they arose about 40 million years ago. So those would include the baboons and langurs. And so that's 40 million years ago. And then, so we are so much younger. We are so much younger, really, as a species compared to those.
And here's a question from a young person. Christopher in Colorado says, I'm a freshman in college. How do I plan my future? You know, I hear a lot from these young adults that they, as they're starting what they consider starting their life, although he's been living for 21 years, they just have this blank slate now as they're beginning college, and they absolutely are filled with anxiety over what steps they need to take to participate in the world.
Yes. It's very human to want to know where we're going, to want to plan where we're going. He's asking, how do we do that?
Yeah. And I think a lot of young adults are asking that same question.
And because we are spiritual beings, ultimately, you've got to just do what you're passionate about doing, what you're really interested in, what really fascinates you. For instance, I just got a passion for learning Spanish, so I'm reading a lot of Spanish and listening to a lot of Spanish music. And so the important thing is just do what you really are interested in, and try to avoid worrying about whether that's going to become your career. It might grow into a career, it might not. It might lead to similar branches. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. What matters is what you're doing now. Living intensely in the moment. That's what matters. And that's, so just see, can you imagine yourself being a lawyer or doctor or musician in a few years? You could just work hard at that. And that's what you're really profoundly interested in. So make sure it's not like just a whim, not like a passing superficial interest. It's got to be a deep conviction, and go with that. And it's very human, very important for all of us to know where we're going, to plan for the future, and see where we're going to be in a few years. Like, are we going to retire? Are we going to retire in a different place? Do we want to live in a nice?
Did you start thinking about that when you were younger? I didn't. I think I really floated for really until I was in my 30s.
That's a good point.
You know,
I could just, I think when I was younger, I just knew I wanted to
teach,
do something in biology.
Yeah.
I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher, actually. I wanted to be a biologist originally. I wanted to be a field biologist.
Oh, okay.
I just went with that. I kind of knew that in high school and I kept going with that. So I majored in biology and it led to many different directions and it led eventually to teaching. Even worked in wood products. But the important thing the important thing is that I was just doing it. I was learning it. I was having fun. I was working hard, learning the concepts and doing it. But even at that young age, we still want to plan. We want to know where we're going to be in a few years. What's going to happen to us? Where are we going? What's our future going to look like? And so we could take an educational course that prepares for a career. As we're older in a career, we might want to think about retirement. When are we going to retire? Are we going to move to a different city, a warmer climate, a colder climate? Where are we going to be? We want to know to feel secure, to feel content, peaceful. That's why if I could just to project it further, I think it's very important for a human to want to know where we're going to be after we die. And that's so we can, in a way, prepare for that. And I think the best way to do that is to build a more beautiful world because we're going to remain in it. And that's so important because if we are at peace, I think reincarnation is very practical. It can help us get on with the business of doing what we need to do to work hard. It's not an unhealthy preoccupation with death. It's if we just are at peace knowing that, okay, I'm going to be a different person, but I'm going to come back. It's going to be an adventure. I don't know. It could be really scary. I could come back as somebody really frightening, but I'll come back. But the chances are I'll be something very good and wonderful because life is wonderful for everybody, no matter who they are, for at least some period of their life, at least in their childhood. And I'm going to remain on Earth and it's going to be okay. I'm going to keep on enjoying the great human adventure and could lead to traveling to other planets and who knows where it's going to lead, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to be part of it. And then once we're at peace, sorry, Dory.
Oh, I was going to say, you think karma plays a part of reincarnation? What we are doing in this life and what we take on to the next?
No. So that's according to karma as part of Buddhism, Hindu religion, and teaches that we, through our actions, by wholesome actions, we can sow wholesome karmic seeds, which can ripen into pleasure later. Our unwholesome actions, destructive actions, we produce unwholesome karmic seeds, which ripen into pain later. That's a very interesting religious ideas, but they're good to know. I learned about them, but I don't take it literally, and I don't believe they really represent the reality of reincarnation at all. Because there's no divine authority judging or governing people. It's completely impersonal. And we choose to do constructive, creative, good things because we believe as humans deep down they're the right thing to do. So we do it. And we're not doing it just to live in a state of luxury and opulence later and get rewards bestowed on us by some divine being. At least that's my belief. Anyway. So I believe that that's something that religion talks about. And take information.
Yeah, because there are other religions that don't believe in reincarnation.
Yes,
so, there are many different opinions and belief systems for people. It's just like, you know, people of who are white don't believe that we have any connection to African Americans. I mean, a lot of people would be appalled to even think that. So I think there's a lot, as you said, we're very young in this world. There's so much that people haven't learned yet or acknowledged or accepted or are willing to learn about. They just want to stay divided.
Yes. But the reality is that we're unified. They're in their emotional, intellectual state. They might believe they're divided, but the reality is we're unified.
Right. It's just getting people to that place of accepting that and
yes,
and living in that, in that concept.
That's right, Dory. And so just, and that's the beauty of the approach of humanism is through free inquiry and rational reasoning, we can get to the truth of the reality and certainly be informed by religion, but not dictated by it. And once we are at peace with the reality of reincarnation, that we are going to be eternally, we're going to stay on this planet, be part of the adventure forever, or in this universe, or this beautiful universe, our eternal home, which I believe, then we can just enjoy we can relax and enjoy the present. We can get on with our work. We can pave the road, build houses. We don't have to worry about, we don't have to worry about death. And this can help dispel all the anxiety and fear and dread that can descend upon us in adult years as we realize our mortality. We're the only species in the world that is aware of our mortality. And it can be quite frightening to think about the fact, which Paul Tillich calls the shock of non-being, the thought that we just won't be here. And then we won't be here. Well, where are we? Is that it?
Like, where will we be?
Right? Will we be in a heaven where it's sort of whitewashed heaven, where we just spend our time singing and being nice to each other and polite and nothing ever happens, exciting happens? That's not very appealing to me. Will there be no conflict, no problems to solve? That's not appealing to me. It's not appealing to me to be in a state of nirvana, which is a Buddhist belief, which is seems very hazy and disembodied state of existence. We just kind of float around and meaninglessly, aimlessly. Is there no purpose? So that doesn't appeal to me. What appeals to me is thought that we're going to remain here on Earth. And it's exciting to me that we're all part of this great cycle of life, that we can return to childhood again. That's actually, as a middle-aged adult, I'm actually looking forward to being a kid again one day. As much as I think an adult is just as beautiful, just as wonderful, but yeah, and it'll be a great, exciting adventure. So,
Elizabeth in Colorado asks, if you were to die today, would you have any regrets?
No, because I know that I'm at peace and happy knowing that I've done the best I could. I've got flaws. Yeah, I've got struggles, problems.
Humans are not perfect.
A lot of confusion, a lot of problems, but I've done the best I can. And every day I'm dedicated to learning about the truth of our species, of what it means to be human, what it means to love and care for people. And I'm doing the best I can. Sometimes I fall down on my face. Many times I fall down on my face and face things that I'm not prepared for. And it hurts, but just get back up and no regrets.
Good. Eve in Colorado says, what's the difference between soul and spirit?
Very good question. The answer is none. They're both the same. It's just
different words for the same thing.
Yeah. Spirit might be a little bit more archaic, I think, but
okay.
It's our intangible essence, or yeah.
And Jennifer in Oregon, and I think we kind of touched on this, is, you know, does science recognize spirits in the soul?
No.
Right.
Yeah. It can't do it. It can only recognize what is perceived by the senses, what can be tasted, touched, heard, felt, smelled.
Right. That's why it's science.
And taste test.
Kathy in Colorado says, what do you think of these sites like Ancestry.com and 23andMe and these other testing sites and how we're learning about each other through this way?
I think it's great. I looked at it last night. 23andMe shows that we're 99% related, could map out our whole genetic ancestry, and let us know if we're if any genetic predispositions to certain diseases and illnesses, conditions, and that we could be really well informed and make good health decisions there regarding lifestyle and diet. I think it's great. It's beautiful, and
lot of good information that you can get from there.
Yes, tell us how. Give us an extraordinary amount of information about the physical, the tangible, our bodies, and how far it can do, how much it could do, and it's very vast. But it's only our bodies.
Right.
Not our souls.
Right. And our last question for today is Katie from Colorado says, you know, can artificial intelligence have a soul?
No.
Right. It's artificial. I mean,
no. So C-3PO and R2-D2 from Star Wars do not have souls. Even though often in science fiction movies, the droids are the comic relief. And I believe that humor and laughter comes from souls. But so they're kind of anthropomorphized. But robots or artificial intelligence cannot have a soul.
They're fun to look at and to watch. But yes.
Yes, they are. We can make believe all kinds of things. It's great. Yeah, I love it.
That's
I love
right.
it.
I saw some dancing robots recently, dancing to music, and it was quite entertaining. Well, Adam, I really, you know, want to thank you. We didn't get through all of the questions today. We'll have to have you come back and continue this conversation.
I'd love to come back.
Yes, that would be great because we didn't even get to really talk about reincarnation, and you know, it's just a deep subject, and I can see just from the, you know, 2 pages of questions I got for this show that people are interested and they want to know more, and they're exploring and they're opening themselves up to possibilities. So I like that conscious thought that's happening, and we will definitely have you come back again and continue this conversation.
Thank you, Dory. And just in closing, I'll say that I just really believe that I have a lot of respect for religions and how people in them have been enlightened and achieved peace in their humanity through them and helping other people. And so that's wonderful. With my humanistic approach, I just do not take any kind of moral instruction or
And I believe you have a YouTube video that's up as well, yes. Right?
Yeah,
please send me that again. I will put that on your page so people can listen to that as well and learn more about you and what you're doing. And if you create some more videos, make sure you send me those links and I'll add them to your page.
Yeah, I'm creating them more right now. So the channel is called Humanistic Reincarnation. I'll send you the links.
Yep, please
and, do. It's based on humanism, whereas I take all the basis of my explanation is based on human values, human inquiry, not divine ones. That's all. But
thank you, Adam, so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Dore. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you very well. And I want to say I've learned a great deal from your show.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, next week, actually, just to introduce Malia Snyder, Dr. Malia Snyder, who is an education director and clinical therapist for Open Sky Wilderness Program here in Durango, Colorado, is going to be our guest. And she's going to talk about heart connections, how becoming more present, staying attuned and content in our daily lives,
helps
us stay connected to our heart connections. So I see another theme happening here of what's taking place. And I've known Malia for a number of years. I'm excited to have her come and share deep from the heart. And she's had quite a journey this year. So I know that that will be a part of her sharing next week.
Yes. And so being content in the present, not worrying about the future, that's so important.
Yep.
Just focus on what we're doing.
And I always end the show with a special saying. So today it is, anxiety attracts more anxiety. Worry attracts more worry. Unhappiness attracts more unhappiness. Happiness, however, attracts happiness. Joy attracts joy. Kindness attracts kindness. Love attracts more love. And peace attracts more peace. So to change your world, change the way you speak, the way you feel, the way you think, the way you look at things. It's just as easy as that. Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Every voice matters. I'm your host, Dori Francis. Thank you, Adam, for joining us from Canada. And I will look forward to seeing you all next week with Dr. Malia Snyder. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.